explain what this is about in just a few moments, but let me start with something that may seem a little bit random, but I don't think it is, and hopefully we'll see that it really isn't. In Yechezkel Perek Gimel, Sukkim Hei through Vav, Hei through Zion, rather, we read the following. Yechezkel is told by Hashem, Ki lo el am im kei safav chidei lashon atashaluch al Beit Yisrael. I'm sending you to Bnei Yisrael. I'm not sending you to some nation that doesn't speak your language. Lo el amim rabim. I'm not sending you to many different nations im kei safav chidei lashon that speak all kinds of different languages. Asher lo tishma divrehem. Im lo alehem shlachticha hema yishmu elecha. Were I to have sent you, says Yechezkel, says Hashem to Yechezkel, were I to have sent you to, were I be sending you to all these different nations that, you know, spoke all kinds of foreign languages that, and wouldn't understand what you're saying, they would listen to you. Uveit Yisrael lo yovu lishma, but Bnei Yisrael will not be willing to listen. Lo yovu lishma elecha. Ki einam ovim lishma elai, because they won't listen to you because they don't want to listen to me. Ki kol Beit Yisrael chizkei metzach ukshei lev hema. Right? They're stubborn. They're not going to listen. It's such a strange thing on the surface. It's such a strange thing. Like, why is Hashem saying, you know, if I were sending you to all these other nations to give muster about Bnei Yisrael, presumably, they would listen. But I'm saying Bnei Yisrael, they're not going to listen. It's just such a strange thing to say. What's the point? But if you look in context, you'll see that over the course of these prakim, meaning the opening prakim of Yechezkel, starting already in Perek Aleph, and certainly in Perek Bet, and Gimel, and Dalid, there is a tremendous amount of imagery and language that is borrowed from the story of Migdal Bavel. Okay, and if you look one thing after another, first of all, Yechezkel's nevuot are in Bavel. That's where he is to begin with. Okay, and that already we read in the very first pasuk of Sefer Yechezkel, Yechezkel Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Vani Betocha Gola, he's in Bavel. In Perek Gimel, I'm not going in order, but if you take a look for a moment, what we just read, right, Pasuk Vav, Lo el amim rabim im kei safa v'chdei lashon asher lo tishma divrehem. Talking about many different nations where you don't understand each other's languages, right? That, of course, is the end of the story of Migdal Bavel, where, starting from Pasuk Zayin, Hava nerda v'navla sham svatam asher lo yishma'u ish svat re'eu. Where one person doesn't understand the other's language, right? And spreading out and dividing to many different nations. Pasuk Ted, Al Kain Karashma Bavel, Kisham Balal Dunai Svat Kol Aretz, Misham Efitzam Adonai Al Pnei Kol Aretz. If you take a look at Perek Gimel and Perek Dalet, one of the refrains that comes up again and again in Pasuk Yud Aleph and Pasuk Chav Zayin, again in that's in Perek Gimel and Perek Bet, we have it in Pasuk Hey and Pasuk Zayin. He keeps on talking about Im Yishma'u V'im Yichdalu, Im Yishma'u V'im Yichdalu. Right? In Pasuk Hey and Zion, in Perek Bet, in Perek Gimel, Im Yishmu Vim Yechdal, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, in Pasuk Kav Zion, Hashomea Yishma V'achadel Yechdal. Again, in Pasuk Kav Zion. And that, of course, this idea of listening or not listening, hearing, understanding or not understanding, and Yechdalu comes from Pasuk in Bereishit Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Chet, Vayafes Adonai Otam Misham al Pnei Kol Aretz. Hashem spreads them out. Vayechdulu livnot ha'ir. Right, they cease building the city. And finally, the last clue that I'm going to just mention very briefly. Yechezkel Perek Dalet Pasuk Aleph. The last one in this second box on the first page. Vata ben Adam kach lecha leveina. So Yechezkel is told to chisel, to etch in this picture of a city. The city that it represents is Yerushalayim. But what is the city made of? What is this representation of the city made from? from a levena, from a brick, which is, of course, right at the beginning of the story of Migdal Babel, Pasuk Gimel, where Gimel and Dalet, where we read that number one, Vayamru Ishal Re'eu Havanil Bana Levenim, right? They're going to make these levenim, the bricks, the levena, and what are they going to do with it? Next Pasuk, they're going to Vayamru Hava Nivne Lanu Ear. They're going to take the levena and make it into an ear, just as by Yechezkel. The point is that what we have here is something very interesting, which is that Yechezkel is told that he's being sent to Bnei Yisrael. He's being sent to Yerushalayim, right? With this message to Yerushalayim, and he's going to speak about Yerushalayim. He's actually speaking in Babel, but he's going to speak about Yerushalayim. He's going to speak to Bnei Yisrael. There's a contrast between that and between the Amim Rabim, the Safa, right, the Asher Lo Yishmu, about not understanding each other's language, etc. Bnei Yisrael do understand each other's language, and they are not many different people. They're one people, and therefore what you have really here is, this is the beginning of the Migdal Babel story. This is the Migdal Babel story, right? The beginning of the story, and this is the end of the story, right? The conclusion of the story, and what we're being told is that the problem, right? The problem is being described in terms of the beginning of the story of Migdal Babel. Bnei Yisrael are one people. They understand each other's language. They understand Yechezkel's language, but they're not listening to the message from Hashem. And the contrast is, what would be a good situation is if we were talking about Amim Rabim, many different nations that didn't speak each other's language, that didn't understand Yechezkel, that didn't speak the same language, because that's like the end of the story of Migdal Babel, right? It was predicated on the idea that the beginning of Migdal Babel is the problem, and the end of the story of Migdal Babel is the solution. Okay, you understand what I'm saying? Right? What you get from Yechezkel is that the beginning of the story of Migdal Babel, where it's one nation, unified, that's the problem. The solution lies in being scattered, dispersed, separated, and diversified, and not understanding each other's language. That's the solution of it. And so really what's being said is that the current situation is the problem. The solution is to be found in the destruction, okay, in the Korban, okay? That's really what's being said here. But also that Migdal Babel, the story of Migdal Babel, serves as a description of the problem and the solution, okay, the problem and the solution, okay? And this is a very, very important framework for Migdal Babel, and it brings us to our topic. Our topic is, as it says on the top of the page, Migdal Babel B'Tanach. What I'd like to do is to try to, first of all, to both at the same time, discuss a little bit about what Migdal Babel is about, what that story is about. And again, there are many, many, many interpretations, some opposite, all kinds of interpretations from Rashi to Ramban to Abarbanel and many, many others. But we're going to focus on what I think is the pshat in the psukim, what's most compelling in the psukim. It's basically based on the approach, or along the lines of the approach, at least, of certain mefarshim, particularly, first and foremost, the Ran. Okay, the Drashot HaRan. Yes?
Do you mind explaining again why that's a solution to that?
I'm explaining why it's a solution. I'm just saying that the beginning of the story of Migdal Babel, where everyone is unified, they're one people, they're one nation, one language, and they all understand each other, that's a description of when there's a problem.
What was that chronologically?
The beginning of the story of Migdal Babel. And the solution is when they are spread out and become many nations and many different languages and don't understand each other.
The solution for who?
The solution in the story of Migdal Babel. As we will see. We haven't done it yet, so that's why. Okay, I'm just describing. In other words, the way it's presented in Yechezkel is that this is part. I mean, it's described in terminology and imagery that suggests that this is the beginning of the story of Migdal Babel. This is the end of the story of Migdal Babel. And what Hashem says to Yechezkel is, in this situation, there's a problem. They're not going to listen. They're not going to do the right thing. In this situation, were it to be this situation, then everything would be great. Then they would listen. It would be okay. You see what I'm saying? It was presenting the beginning of the story of Migdal Babel as the problem and the end as the solution.
Okay.
We have to understand what sense that's true by Migdal Babel, but I think that's how it's being applied. Okay? Okay, so we're going to delve into Migdal Babel now, with apologies to those for whom this is Chazara, but a lot of what we're doing is not, and so I'm going to... But it's necessary to do all the pieces in order to have the whole picture emerge. So Ezra Hashem will hopefully be valuable to everybody. Bereishit Perek Yud Aleph, okay? Bottom of the second half of page one here. Story of Migdal Babel. So as is noted by the Ran, and let me just quick flash forward to page two, where you have the Drashot Haran conveniently located, okay, in the bottom half of the page, Drashot Haran. You can read it at your leisure if you haven't already. Don't do it now because we have too much else to do. But the explanation, the basic approach, is along the lines of, I hope to add a little bit, but the foundation is from the Ran. In Drashot Haran, the Ran explains, he points out that first of all, it's very interesting, that Migdal Babel, in the Pshat, in the Psukim, it doesn't talk about any chait. It doesn't talk about any dinner. It doesn't talk about Avodah Zarah. Okay, that's all in the Midrash. It doesn't talk about a battle against Hashem. That's in the Midrash. It doesn't talk about leaky heavens and all the other ideas. Again, all those things have meaning. All those things have meaning, and they actually connect to what we're going to discuss to a certain degree, but that's not the point. But taken literally, that's not what it talks about in the Psukim. It doesn't talk about a chait. It doesn't talk about something that we're doing bad. And for that matter, it doesn't talk about an onesh. Right? If you look at it, Hashem doesn't kill them, doesn't wipe them out. There's no flood, no fire and brimstone, no makot. What happens? We're told, says the Ran, again, this is straight from the Ran. Ran says, if you look at the psukim, all it says that was wrong, that they were... I want to quote the words of the Psukim. Number one, it says that the problem is Vahi kol aretz safa achat utvarim achadim, Pasuk Aleph. Vahi kol aretz safa achat utvarim achadim. They all were of one language and they all had similar ideas and There was a unity of ideas. That's in Pasuk Aleph. And then in Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Adonai, Hein Am Echad, V'Safa Achad L'Kulam. Again, that same idea that they're all unified, they're all one. V'Zeh Achilam Lasot. Look what they're doing. What are they doing? Right? All it says is that they're Am Echad, V'Safa Achad, and Dvarim Achadim. And therefore, says the Ran, that was the problem. It's clear in the Pesukim, that was the problem. And the solution, not an onesh, but the solution was to spread them out, which causes them to become diversified and different and separate. And therefore, instead of being one unified people, they become many with many different languages, many different ideas, etc. Says the Ran, why was it a problem and why is this the solution? So the Ran explains as follows. He based himself on a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that unity is a good thing if you're talking about tzaddikim, a bad thing if you're talking about Rishon. He says that they had their society was predicated on negative things, and therefore being all unified meant that they wouldn't improve, that they would just remain that way, etc. Okay, Adkan the Ran. And again, you can look at the Ran at your leisure and see exactly how he formulates it, but this is the basic idea. I'd like to develop the idea of the Ran and to read the story of Migdal Babel from the Psukim and in the context of a couple of comments by Chazal. Vahi kol aretz safa achat utvarim achadim. Starting from Pasukal. Everyone had unified ideas. Vahi ben as'am mikedem. Now notice, where do they build Migdal Babel? In what kind of a place? This is very, very critical. Where they build Migdal Babel? In what type of geographic location? In a Bik'ah. What's a Bik'ah? A valley. Okay? Now, if you wanted to build something, a structure that was going to reach to God to go and fight with him, right? Where are you going to build it? On a mountain. You know, the last place you build is on a valley, in a valley, right? The point is that when it talks about Migdal Roshob B'Shamayim, it's very much like our expression, a skyscraper. Okay, I don't think anyone thinks that because we call it a skyscraper that it's, you know, actually doing any damage to the sky. We call it a skyscraper because it's very, very tall. There are similar expressions in the Torah, well, in Tanakh and Job, in the Chumash itself, about Arim Gidolot V'Sroh B'Shamayim. These were cities that were not up in the heavens. They weren't up in the. They weren't floating in the sky. They were just very tall, you know, unusually tall structures. And that's what it means, Migdal V'Roshob B'Shamayim. It's clear from the fact that they built it in Bik'ah, right? They wanted a tower. They wanted something that towered over them. And they wanted to build an ear, and they wanted to build it in the Bik'ah. Why? So as the Nitziv explains, the basic idea was that they wanted to enforce this conformity. Everyone was unified in thought, in speech. They had the same ideas, the same philosophy, the same set of ideas. And what they wanted was to maintain that. They wanted to maintain the status quo. They wanted to remain the same. And we all know that when a society spreads out, they become more diversified. They become separate and different from each other. And if they remain in one place, they remain cohesive, and they maintain their identity. And therefore, they wanted to create this place in a valley where they have a city and a tower, and they would make sure that no one would leave. And the Nitziv talks about that basic idea. The Nitziv says something else, which is also really fascinating. This is the bottom right-hand quadrant. The Nitziv says, Kol Mikra Ein Ba Inyan. Why does it tell us about making the bricks and about the oven and how they constructed it? Why do we care about that? And the Nitziv gives a beautiful answer. He says, V'nir'eh Dekan Merumaz Kabbalat Chazal Teipilu L'Avram Avinu L'Kivshan Ha'esh. What the Nitziv is saying is that we don't find that when it talks about, you know, burning Avraham Avinu, it doesn't say that they took Avraham Avinu and they tied him to a stake and they lit a fire. What does it say? It says they took him and they threw him into the Kivshan HaEsh, implying that there was already Kivshan, right? That it wasn't that they started a fire. They threw him into the fire that already was. What does that mean? It means simply that there was already a Kivshan. What Kivshan was that? The Kivshan of Migdal Babel. I don't know if the Nitziv is correct historically. I don't know whether really this is the Kivshan HaEsh of Avraham Avinu or not. But I know that poetically, what he's saying is a very, very deep truth. And we'll try to understand that in a few minutes. Okay. There is a Midrash Rabbah. Okay, a Breishit Rabbah. This is on the right-hand top, the top right-hand quadrant of the four on the bottom of the page. Okay, bottom of page one, where the Midrash begins, Breishit Rabbah begins by saying that Ekev Asher Shama Avraham B'Koli, the Gematria of Ekev, what's the Gematria of Ekev?
172.
Right? Avram lived for how many years?
175.
Okay, which means it leaves 3 years. Ekev Asher Shama Avram B'Koli. The first opinion, Breishit Rabbah, is that Avram discovers Hashem when he's 3 years old. Right, the famous Midrash. There's another opinion in the Midrash, and that is that how old was Avram when he discovers Hashem? Not three, but 48. Okay, 48. There's another opinion, 40, but that's, well, yes, I know. But the point is that in Breishit Rabbah, these are the two opinions. Okay, 48 or three. Says so the Midrash just said 48, it doesn't give any basis for it. Doesn't tell us where we know that from. Okay? It just says there's an opinion that Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina say Arba'im u'shmona shana, and then Reish Lakish comes along, I'm sorry, reverse the order. Reish Lakish says 3 years old. So the 3 years old we have a reason for. Why 48? Why 48? So there's a perush which is attributed to Rashi. I don't think it's really from Rashi, but anyhow, I don't know for sure, but I don't think it doesn't seem to me that it is. But in any case, there's a parish on Bereishis Rabbah, which is miyuchas at least to Rashi, which says the following. And one of the reasons that I doubt it's Rashi is because it's not a very good pshat. He says like as follows. He says, why do we say 48? Because Avraham was 48 at the time of Migdal Babel. And Migdal Babel happened when Avram was 48 years old. Okay, as it's explicit in Seder Olam Rabbah. Okay, so Avram is 48 at the time of Migdal Babel. Says this Perush, well, v'lo matzinu shenishtateh be'atzatam. We don't find that Avram participated in Migdal Babel. So it must be that that's when he discovered God. That's a very strange...
Or
any time before that, exactly. And what's more, it's a strange thing to say, lo matzinu shenishtateh be'atzatam. We don't find that Avram participated. Not that I think that Avram participated, but what do you mean we don't find? Who does it say built Migdal Babel? It's like, it sounds as if like we have a list of all the people who built Migdal Babel, and look at that, no Avram Avinu in the list, right? Who does it say built it? They did. The people did. Who? How do you know it included Avram, didn't it? Anyhow, it's a very strange shot, but it is very important. Nonetheless, it's very valuable nonetheless, because this point is absolutely true. And it's exactly the point of the Bereishis Rabbah. What Bereishis Rabbah is trying to tell us is the following. This is the key to understanding Migdal Babel. Okay, so listen very carefully. This is the key. Migdal Babel was this institution, as the Ran explains in the Tziv, that it was meant to enforce conformity. Avraham Avinu was emerging at the same time. And it doesn't really matter whether it was 10 years before, 10 years after, or exactly at what point. But the point is, at the same basic stage in history, two things are happening. Avraham Avinu is emerging with a new approach, bringing a new set of ideas and values, etc., to the world. Right? Shehu me'ever echad, b'kol om kul me'ever sheni. That the first great iconoclast, which is means a smash of idols, which is of course based on the story of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is emerging, but there's a problem. There's an impediment. And that's what Migdal Babel is all about. It's not a chait. The point is not that it's a chait. There's no mention of chait, there's no mention of onesh. That's not the point. The point is that there's a problem. Migdal Babel is standing in the way of the emergence of Avraham Avinu, the emergence of Am Yisrael. And if there's going to be a Migdal Babel and there's going to be this, what do they do with Avraham? They take him and throw him into the Kivshan HaEsh, with which they're making Migdal Babel, right? According to the Tzip. That's the imagery. The point is that this is standing in the way of the emergence of Avraham, and therefore, what's the solution? That they're spread out, they're diversified, they're changed, they become different from each other. And that allows for the emergence of Avraham, it allows them for the emergence of something different and something better. I just want to show you this midrash in the Psukim, okay? Everyone please turn to page 2. It's very important to see this inside. You have to see this. I think, again, everyone, you know, it's a totally subjective call, but I have to tell you, the first time that I realized this, many, many years ago, more accurately, decades ago, but anyhow, but a long time ago, I realized this, my hair stood on end. It was like, I was just like, I couldn't believe it and it's an amazing thing because it's really such an important lesson because, you know, we all know that when you get to the prakim or the sections that, you know, they call the begats, you know, like the you know, this one holid at this one and lived this number of years and these genealogies and you can go out of your mind, like you just try to zip through and get through them already and it just, you know, makes Shai Mikrobek and Targum so much harder and yeah, you try and get through these psukim and they're like so boring and I want to show you what's written here if you pay attention to, you know, and again, I'm... People know, you know, names are my Achilles heel. It's like enamored with this type of section. But you have to look at what it says. It's amazing. We go to the end of Perek Tet. The end of Perek Tet is the story of of, and you have to follow the flow very carefully. The end of Perek Tet is the story of Bnei Noach, right? Noach getting drunk, what happens with the children, and Noach gives these brachot and klalot to his children, right? Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem, Yikanan Eved Lamo, all these brachot and klalot. What comes right after that? Perek Yud. What's Perek Yud? Ve'ele toldo b'nei Noach, Shem Cham v'Yefed, v'yavaldu lehem banim achar mabul. We hear about, well, what became of those brachot and klalot, right? Who comes from Shem, and who comes from Yefed, and who comes from Cham, right? Who descends from these people? That's Perek Yud. And so it tells us the descendants of Yefed and the descendants of Cham. And it begins to tell us the descendants of Shem. So very carefully. Perikyu, we have the beginning of the descendants of Shem. The beginning. And it goes generation, generation, generation. Right? And of course, if we're reading about the descendants of Shem, we want to know about the fulfillment of the bracha of Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. And who is the fulfillment of that? Who's going to be the beginning of the fulfillment of the genealogy of Shem? Avram. So you're waiting to get to Avram. You're reading Perek Yud, and you go from Shem, generation, generation, generation. If I'm not mistaken, 9 generations. We're almost at Avram. It stops. It stops. Okay? Elam Ishchob ben Enoch, Tol Tam, etc. But it stops. Elam ben Shem. Before we get to Avram, we turn to Perek Yud Aleph. We have the story of Migdal Bavel. The first 9 psukim, the story of Migdal Bavel. Look at Pasuk Yud. Eile toldot Shem, Shem ben ma'at shana v'yod et aprachshad shatem achar mabul, v'chi Shem, etc., etc., until we get to Avram Avinu in Pasuk Chafav. In other words, what do we have? We have, please look at the red on the board. We have the story of Bnei Noah in Perek Tet. In Perek Yud, we read about Bnei Noach and what happens to them, the continuation of that. We read about Cham and Yefet, and we start to read about Shem. We're heading for Avraham, but what happens? There's a roadblock. We can't get to Avraham because what's in the way? Migdal Bavel. Migdal Bavel is eliminated, and then what does the Torah do? It starts again from Shem and goes straight to Avram Avinu. In other words, telling us that the point is to get from Shem to Avram. We try to do that before Migdal Bavel, but Migdal Bavel is in the way. Migdal Bavel is the problem, right? Because we have this enforced conformity. Avram Avinu can't emerge in terms of his impact on the world. And therefore, what happens? Migdal Bavel has to be eliminated. And once Migdal Bavel is eliminated, we're able to start again from Shem and go straight from Shem to Avram Avinu. Everyone see that? Is the Midrash, Rabbi Yochanan, what he says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, when they say that Avram is 48 when he discovers Hashem, again, I don't know if he was 48, it was 47 or 40, you know, 49, or it doesn't matter. But the point is that the idea of that Midrash, that there's a conflict between Avram and Migdal Bavel, there's a conflict of Avram being emerging and Migdal Bavel, this is Mamash Pshah in the Pesukim, right? You can see it written right in the Pesukim. If we have our eyes open. Okay, and that's what I mean when I say that Migdal Bavel is a problem and a solution. And that's the model that it serves for Yechezkel, right? That we have the problem of Migdal Bavel that's stopping the idea of Am Yisrael emerging in the proper way. Sometimes that's a problem from without, such as in the case of Migdal Bavel. Sometimes it's a problem from within, as in the case of the Dor HaKorban, but either way, it's something that's preventing and it has to be removed in order to allow the emergence of something better. Okay, that's the basic model of Migdal Bavel. Let's please turn to page 3. Very quickly, I wanted to show you there are two places in Tanakh where we have the same idea, the same Migdal Bava model, same Migdal Bava model of Migdal Bava, of the unification of the nations being a problem, stopping Bnei Israel from emerging in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu, and then being removed. And I'm just going to quickly mention them. One is in Yoshua Perek Tet. I can only allude to this very quickly because we have very little time. But in Yoshua Perek Tet, where it says, "Vayikishmol kol amalachim asher be'evar yaden," we're in page 3 of the booklet. Okay, by Yoshua Perek Tet. "Vayikishmol kol amalachim asher be'evar yaden bahar vashvela v'chol chof hayam gadol el mul halvanon hachitiva moria kanania prizi ativiva musi." Vaykabtsu, listen carefully. Vaykabtsu yachdav lilachem im Yoshua im Yisrael per echad. All of the nations of Canaan gathered together, about to attack Bnei Israel. And then, you want to hear what happened in this, you know, enormous battle, and there's no continuation. And the story, there's a new alliance and a new threat, etc., in Perek Yud, and in between you have the whole story of the Givonim. And what's fascinating is if you look in Pasuk Bet, Perek Tet Pasuk Bet, Veikabtsu Yachdav, they all gathered together, Yachdav, like Echad, together as one, Lilachem im Yisrael v'im Yisrael, im Yoshua v'im Yisrael, Per Echad. You want to hear the echoes of Migdal Bavel there? And what happens? You read the Psukim, and it seems that the alliance just falls apart. There never is this war. They're trying to prevent, the Kibush HaAretz are trying to prevent the emergence of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. It just falls apart. That's one. There's another one in Tehillim, in Lama Rakshu Goyim, where again, we have the same basic idea. We don't have time really to do inside. I was really blown away many years ago when I came across this Midrash Tanchuma. I was going through the Midrash Tanchuma. I come up to this Midrash Tanchuma. Rabbi Evo b'shem Rabbi Yosef Aglili Omer, b'shlosha mikomot chalku b'ayah olam al kash baruch hu. There are three times when the world had a machloket, the nations of the world had a machloket with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Achat kan, meaning Migdal Bavel, v'achat b'mei Yoshua, sh'ne'emar v'yikabsu yachdav v'yilachem miYoshua v'mYisrael pe'achad, v'achat b'mei Gog u'Magog, sh'ne'emar yityatzvu malchei aretz, v'roznim nostu yachad, al-Hashem v'al-Menshicho, v'kan v'emru ishal v'e'eu, kush, etc., Migdal Bavel. Mash, the Midrash says explicitly these three instances, like these two events, how they echo and parallel Migdal Bavel. And again, the idea that Migdal Bavel is all about the something that stands in the way of the emergence of Hashem's plan for the world throughout Israel, and how the removal is the solution. I just want to conclude with the following. Throughout Tanakh, and there are many examples of this, and I'm just going to give you two examples, and suffice with that, but there are certainly more. We find that there is a convergence of Migdal Bavel, the story of Migdal Bavel, and Bavel as in the empire that brings about the Chorban Bayit Rishon. Okay? And I think that this is very much connected to what we've been discussing. If we look in Dvarim Perek Chet, it's really fascinating. The Ramban has a general rule that he says in many, many places. Ramban talks about many, many times how the Torah as a rule does not give specific nevuot about things that are going to happen, because it leaves open the possibility of Bechira Chavshit and that things could play out in different ways, etc. But a lot of times, you know, the Torah doesn't say, this nation is going to do this and this is going to happen to them, those types of things we don't find in the Torah. It's much more general, but there are often hints at what is going to happen that can only be understood really in retrospect. And I think that this is a classic example of that idea. Dvarim Perek Chavchet, the Tochacha in Parsha Kitavo, where it says as follows, Sukkim Yisad Adonai Alecha Goy Merachok Mikseh Haaretz Kasher Yidei Hanasher Goy Ashalo Tishma Lashono. What is the nation that's going to come and attack Bnei Israel? Goy Ashalo Tishma Lashono. That language is taken almost word for word from the story of Migdal Bavel, right? Ashalo Yishmu Ish Tzvat Re'ehu. Right, this idea of Ashalu Yishmal Lashono is exactly what it says about Migdal Bavel, about the nations not understanding each other's languages. What nation is going to come? The nation that you're not going to understand its language. What nation is that alluding to? So I don't know if people in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu understood this pasuk, but in retrospect, we understand very well. What nation is this referring to? This is a clear allusion to Bavel, right? This is Migdal Bavel, Shelo Yishmu Ish Tzvat Re'ehu, and this is Goya Shelo Yishmael Shono, this is Bavel. Who, what nation comes and brings about the Korban, the Korban Bayit Rishon? That's none other than Bavel, right? And I'll show you this even more clearly in a moment. And look at how it continues. Ve'fitzcha Adonai b'chol ha'amim, Hashem will scatter you amongst all the nations, mikseh ha'aretz v'akatzeh ha'aretz, Vavat Hashem alim achirim ashalu yadata atav avutecha eitz va'aven. And take a look. V'fitzcha Hashem b'chol ha'amim. What's the end of Migdal Bavel? The end of the story of Migdal Bavel is al kein kara shema Bavel ki sham bala adonai tzvat kol ha'aretz u'misham hefitzam Adonai al p'nei kol ha'aretz. U'misham hefitzam Hashem al p'nei kol ha'aretz. That's exactly right, that's exactly what we have here in Dvarim. Ve'pitzcha Hashem b'chol ha'amim. Right? What?
That's scary.
and especially, there's just a few psukim after Goy Ashalo Tishma Lashono. Right? And it's very, very clear. V'haraya, and this is the proof of it. Look at Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu, who is being mitnabe at the time of the Churban that is brought about by Bavel, right? Now, we know what the story is about. And Yirmiyahu is, you know, saying now is the time that the Tochacha is playing out. Bavel is destroying Yerushalayim and exiling Bnei Israel. And what does Yirmiyahu say? Hinani, this is my mash right before the Churban. Hinani mevi alechem goy mimerchak Beit Yisrael. Everyone hear the echoes of the pasuk in Dvarim, right? It's clearly the pasuk in Dvarim. Hinani mevi alechem goy mimerchak Beit Yisrael. That's exactly Yisashem alkecha goy merachok. Right? And continues. Goy etanu, goy me'olamhu. Goy lo teida lishono v'lo tishma ma yidaber. Okay, and we hear it, right? So it's very clear that you know, Yirmiyahu takes this pasuk in the Tochacha and applies it to what is about to happen with Bavel. It's clear that we're talking about Bavel at this point, right? It's no longer a question. It's like Mamash Perish on the Pesukim in Dvarim from Yirmiyahu Navi. You understand that, right? So this is just to show you how Migdal Bavel is not just an isolated story, it becomes a metaphor. And it's a metaphor for cases where there's this problem of this unified conformity that stands in the way of Hashem's plan. That's in Yoshua and in Tehillim. We have it as the idea of the you know, not being receptive to the message of that Am Yisrael is supposed to receive and transmit. That's, we have that in Yechezkel, again based on the story of Migdal Bavel, and this metaphor is used to convey the idea as well that, if I summarize in just two words, the idea of a constructive destruction, the idea that a perspective on the Churban, that as terrible as the Churban is, it was al menat livnot, to paraphrase the Gemara Shas, and it was in order to rebuild, in order to rebuild better, in order to remove problems and cleanse problems that existed, and that's what the Churban was ultimately and fundamentally about, and that is part of the meaning of applying the imagery of Migdal Bavel to the Tochacha and to the Churban, incorporating that into the Tochacha and into the description of the Churban in Yirmiyahu, is saying that like Migdal Bavel, it was a destruction that was for a constructive purpose. And that's a theme that the Nevi'a Chorban is going to speak about in many different forms. But this is one of the ways in which it expressed itself, is this connection to the story of Migdal Bavel, which is fundamentally about the idea that Migdal Bavel is not about a chet and an onesh, it's about a problem and a solution, a correction to that problem. Shavua tov.
Thank you.
Simcha v'simcha.